Next Step 191, February 2nd, 2020. I don't think we've ever had one on Hot Dog Day. Hey, this is Father Voskin, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, and guess what, about groundhogs too. Happens to be Groundhog Day today. Yes, February 2nd, we are broadcasting from beautiful Glendale, California, where there are no signs of winter, but perhaps Satan has told us differently. Hey, this podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Epostle.net as part of the expanding vision of the In Issues Ministry. Epostle.net, that's apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. Hey, let's take the next step. What are we talking about, Groundhog's Day? What is that? What is a groundhog? Oh, well, it happens to be February 2nd today, the midwinter feast. And in the West, we call it Candlemas. And that's just coming up in a few weeks in the Armenian church calendar as Diarantarach. Beautiful feast. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes, but this morning, Puxatawny Phil, this is now a tradition in the United States of America, in Pennsylvania. There is a groundhog famous for making winter, midwinter forecasts. And if he comes out of his little hibernation, out of his hole this morning, February 2nd, and if he sees his shadow, it means that there are six more weeks of winter. But if he doesn't see his shadow, and I don't know what this means, that means that probably that there are clouds out, it means that spring is close by. Yeah, well, that's a nice little tradition. Well, he came out of his hole this morning, and guess what? Well, it looks like winter is far from over. Yes, he saw his shadow, so it means that we've got six more weeks of winter. And apparently, now he is not, and this is Puxatawny Phil. Now, this is the most famous one, but apparently there's other groundhogs that are competing for this title of Grand Prognosticator of the Weather, of the Winter Cycle. And this happens to be midwinter. Did you hear what preempted my theme song today? It's Dogs in Midwinter. I love this song. I mean, isn't this beautiful? Like, you can almost imagine the footwork on this, can't you? I love it. Can you really know how to stir up things over here? We are going to miss you terribly. Yes, that's right. Along with Puxatawny Phil coming out of his hole, coming out of the engineering hole over here at Big Apostle Studios is Ken. He has just announced that he is going to be leaving our show, actually leaving the area. He's returning back to Canada, and by way of Jakarta. And there is something about that, which I'll find out later. Anyway, Ken has been with the Apostle from the beginning of all of our podcasts. He's engineered these shows, and along the way has taught us a few things. So we hope that we'll be able to continue in the great Ken tradition, but it's been a blessing to have him, and we wish him only the best. We'll be following along, and of course, he's promised to keep us informed of what's going on in his life. Wish him only the best. So, Ken, this is his last show with us. And, well, I guess we will be enjoying a little bit more fresher air around the studio, too. One of the people complaining about that smoke-filled room, as well as the smoke that gets into her crochet work, those beautiful blankets, is our Susie. And she's got a birthday this week. A big shout out to Susie. Happy birthday to you. There you go, see? I knew Ken had a soft spot in his heart for you. Yep, see, he's making up for all that smoke. Happy birthday to you, Susie. Okay, that's what I call a shout-out. I mean, they are shouting happy birthday. And why not? She deserves it. Anyway, happy birthday and many, many happy returns. Susie, of course, the production end on Next Step, as well as everything that we put together at epostle.net. Just a wonderful person. She does it as a labor of love. You know, we just had our parish assembly, and I couldn't emphasize that enough, that this all comes to us from the Glendale campus, where we have the Youth Ministry Center, the St. Peter Youth Ministry Center. And Susie is just such a valuable asset, not only for the Next Step, not only for Epostle, but for all of our ministry, putting together the electronic side of this. And just, Susie, we wish you all the best. Dogs in the middle of winter. Dogs in the middle of winter. It is Dogs in Midwinter. Yes, the groundhog. It's a dog in midwinter, and it happens to be the midwinter right now. Are you ready for some next stepping? Are you ready for some mind expansion beyond what you could ever comprehend? Well, it's coming up right now, because we are going to just tie all of this together. We are going to take from the groundhog, and we are going to go to a place where you cannot imagine. Because along with all of our programming today, we're going to share with you something that is very unique. Like, do you believe? Here's the question for you, okay? Do you believe it? Do you need to believe? Let's ask that, okay? Do you need to believe in something to be able to pronounce it? Do you need to believe in something for you to convince other people in it? How important are those convictions? Are you ready for that? Okay, well, we're going to go through it in a long way, sort of. We're going to go from groundhogs to over there. We're going to start off with the Feast of Groundhogs. Yes, it is a feast, actually. Groundhog Day happens to be a Christian feast. It is called Candlemas. Because today, February 2nd, if you happen to do the math, if you celebrated Christmas on December 25th and add 40 days to it, you get to today. Today is exactly 40 days after Christmas. And far from the tradition of groundhogs coming out and seeing their shadows, throughout the world it is the celebration of the presentation. The presentation, or sometimes called Candlemas, it is the dedication service. Now, follow me on this, okay? This is all going to be wild. By the time you get through this show, you're going to say, wow, how did he take us from there to there? Anyway, bear with me right now. You know you're in for a ride, don't you? Okay, so if you come to the presentation, that comes to us from the Gospel of St. Luke, chapter 2. Okay, I'll give you some time to look it up. Let me give you a little quick synopsis of what's going on. Okay, this is 40 days after the birth of Christ, and it talks about a time of purification. Now, this purification is not about the child, it's about the mother, because as you all know, that childbirth is probably one of the most traumatic, one of the most painful experiences. Yet at the end of the childbirth, of course, there is something so beautiful that remains in the mother's arm, and that beauty, that love, is something that makes, well, it makes mothers almost forget about how traumatic and how painful that experience was. God replaces that pain with something beautiful as the gift of life. But you know that the body has gone through quite a bit. There is a major trauma, and there is a time, well, we give all kinds of names for it. We call it postpartum depression. There is postpartum activities that take place, and healing, and basically in the Bible, it's this 40 days of purification. Let's call it by today's term a maternity leave. You like that? Okay, the maternity leave was 40 days, and then they said on the 40th day you go to the church. It is the time of purification. It is the time that all things are sort of settled down. You have a chance to breathe in, to thank God for the beauty of life, to offer the child in service to God and to all of the beauty around you. So that's what's being described in Luke chapter 2. There, did I do a good job as a man? Okay, I hope so. Okay, so let's look at the story now, okay? So Joseph and Mary bringing the child to the temple, and there is a man there named Simeon at the temple who has been promised by God not to taste death. In other words, he will not die until he sees the Savior of the world, somebody who will liberate the people. And Simeon takes the child in his arms and makes this pronouncement that now it's okay for me to pass away because I have seen with my eyes. I have seen the Savior of this world. So there was a pronouncement. there's a declaration that this Jesus Christ coming into the temple is the Savior of the world, is the one promised by God, is the Messiah, is the completion of the law and the prophets, is the Alpha and the Omega. There it is. So on the 40th day, this pronouncement is made. And this is recorded, like I said, in the Gospel of Luke. And in fact, it has now become a tradition for couples having children to bring their child to the church for a special blessing. And especially in places like where I'm serving here in Glendale, where it's such a large Armenian community, I can tell you very safely that I don't think there's a Sunday that goes by that a couple doesn't come into the church with their new child and asking for this service to take place. It is a short service where this gospel passage is read and then a blessing on the child in preparation for baptism, because obviously the come into the church, the big thing would be for baptism, but we remember the dedication of our Lord, how the Lord was dedicated to the ministry, was dedicated to the church at this point. And so we have this tradition of dedication. Now, let's go back to Groundhog's Day. Today is February 2nd. And you say, well, okay, this is a beautiful tradition, and why aren't we celebrating this today? Actually, in the Armenian church, we celebrate it on February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. Yes, Valentine's Day in the Armenian church is the feast of Groundhog's Day, or Candlemas dedication. Now, why? What's the deal here? It's actually Saint Valentine, beautiful as he is, as much love that he has and passion, he is not celebrated in the Armenian church on February 14th. In fact, on that day, if you do the calculations, today is 40 days. February 2nd is 40 days if you celebrated your Christmas on December 25th. Now, do some rewinding real quickly. Go back to what we were describing last month when we made the podcast about Christmas. And if you celebrate your Christmas on January 6th, then 40 days, add the 40 days, and you get right to February 14th. So the Candlemas, Diyarantaraç in Armenian, falls on February 14th. Now, we don't have this groundhog's tradition, but what we do have is a tradition of purification. And what better way than to purify than with, well, a fire? We have the tradition of bonfires, and this falls right into the tradition of purifying, okay? You purify with heat. I mean, isn't that the way you sterilize things? I remember we'd get splinters in our fingers, and my dad would get this. My dad was like this medic in the army, you know? He knew how to deal with things, and he would take like these small little pins, and before he'd take the splinter out, he would put it on the flame. And I'd say, Dad, what are you doing? It's going to hurt. No, that was the way of sterilizing. Purification. Purifying. The fire purifies. And we still have this tradition. We make bonfires on this feast day, the feast day of Diyarantaraç, actually in the evening, the night before. Now, we come to this year, and this is where we're going to take a small break right now. We do our song of the day every week. We have a very special song. I've picked one out today. It's called Poet Neriev Shuner by Ruben Akhverdian. I want to play it for you because I did this. I got to be honest. I did a search among my Armenian collection for something that would give me a segue over here. And when I saw the dog Shuner and poets, it's called Poets and Dogs. Now you tell me, is that just like the most appropriate title for today? Anyway, Poets and Dogs, Boet Neriev Shuner by Rupen Hachverdian. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking about the second issue that I have with you, and then we're going to put it all together, okay? So I want you to just put a bookmark in it where we're at with Diyarantaraç, with the dedication. We're going to be coming back, and I'm going to show you how it applies. Here it is, Rupen Hachverdian.
Yes, Lucina Miasi. Մոտեցանք սառաջ ջրափոսի, երկիշերը ժամը երկուսին, երկեցինք այս երկային մասին, թե ինչու են պոետներ և շները ընկերներ, որովհետև նրանք գիշերը սիրում են լուսնոտ երգեր, որ մեր կյանքն աղավաղում են, Cerek nenan irakan Kişelere men katnu menk Merdem kere iskakan Mutan per mi pake glusli denka Tu il tabek zruca vartel Yes lusin nai shunu jirafosa Shat vavuz ir arcen kan vipel Shun ur kanganazerim kohki Dun che modesret jirafosi Nain tech desav galor lusni Եվ արսած դատար կայտապսեին, որ իր հայրը ծեղական էր, Մայրնան հայտ ծեղի մի շում, նրանց կապ նորինական չեր, ու ծնվեց մի որ պանտում, որ անվեջ այս գզվրտոցը, անում մի կտոր հացի, ապրելու միակ միջոցն է, որ կյանքի չուտես կացի. Կյանքը մեր կեղտոտ այս ջրախոսն է, ուր լուսնի դատար կապսեն է շողշողում, Կան մարդիկ, որոնք այնտեղ թքում են, իսկ ոմանք լուսին են որոնում, Եվ հանկարծ ջրախոսից սառած, դուրս տողած լուսինը սփռտնած, Նա մեզ մոտեցրեց իր դեմքը տաց, Եվ ահա թե ինչ նա շշնջաց, Որ երգերը մեր ցավերն են, բոլորից թաքուն պահած, Որ գիշերը մենք ոռնում ենք, աշխարհի դեմ դառնացած, Ու մի պահ մեր դեմ բացում է, Դրախտի դռներն աստված, շներին նա կերակրում է ու փակում վերքերը բաց, իսկ այնտեղ բոլոր շները կուշտ են, պոետներն ունեն գիրի ու հաց, և երգերն այնտեղ ոչ թե ոռնում են, այլ երգում են մինչև լուսաբաց, ու պոկում են շղթաները, պոետները ու շները կատաղած, գիշերվա մեջ ամբարձվում է, նրանց երկնաղոտ դարձած, ու թրչում են պոետները, շների հետ խենթացած, այնտեղ ուր արդեն բացել է դրախտի դռներն աստված.
Ռուբեն Հախվերդյան, that song is called Պոետներ և Շուներ. Poets and Dogs. You like that? He asks the question, what do poets and dogs have in common? And then he turns to the night, to the beauty of the night. And that got to me. For some reason, there is something mystical and magical about the night hours and how, you know, you look for these muses and opportunities to really create. Anyway, it's a very beautiful creation in itself. That, of course, the artist Ruben Hachverdian, we will definitely put a link on our show notes so you could check out all of his wonderful music. Okay, we are on the other side of the song. And as I promised, we're going to go in a different direction, and it's all going to come together, okay? Don't panic right now, okay? Don't panic. But we did talk about Groundhog. We did talk about the Day of Groundhogs. We did talk about Dhyarantaraj, Candlemas, about presentation, about purification. Now we're going to go one step further and we're going to bring it all together, okay? So just put a bookmark in it, but don't lose sight of what we talked about. Because I'd like to share with you this article that was submitted to me by our producer, Susie. Part of what she does in producing these shows is find some interesting articles that are very relevant. And I really appreciate this because, you know, part of me is always looking for that relevancy of the Armenian Church. And the Armenian Church has so much to say, and we get caught up in too much of the history rather than applying that faith to what's going on today. I'm a big fan of Hans Küng. He is one of the theologians of the Catholic Church, and I have a book right in front of me. It's almost like a reference book for me. It's called The Church by Hans Küng, and it, of course, as a Catholic theologian, this is much the best of the West for me, and it's nice for me to be able to balance it off with Eastern Christianity. But I am always in awe. There is a part of me that has this good envy, if there is such a thing. In other words, looking at this and saying, why aren't we there as the Eastern tradition, as the Eastern Orthodox community, as the Armenian Church? I mean, there are so many difficulties in life. And when you understand the church in the biblical sense, what we call the apostolic tradition, in other words, as the apostles did, if you've been following our Questions in Faith series, you know that we've been studying the book of Acts. You read the book of Acts in itself and you understand that there is a social mission to the church. There's a social dimension to this. Now, at what point do we take the theory and apply it to our lives today? This is what we call the test of relevancy, right? Okay, well, this article comes to me from Susie, as I told you. She works at a Catholic university. She works at Loyola Law School, one of the finer law schools here in the Los Angeles area, and, of course, run by the Jesuits. And I say that because the article is going to be pointing to someone who is a non-Jesuit and running the school. Susie does, of course, digital management, reference materials. She's in the library over there. So it's kind of got her finger on the pulse of what's going on because there's just a vast amount of information that passes her way daily. And I'm so glad that she shared this with us. This is a column one article that comes out of LA Times. It's I mention this because I want to quote it, okay? It says, Jesuit College's leader is of a different cloth. Got me to thinking, how important is it for us to really buy into it? Like, would it be possible for you to believe one thing and preach another thing? Would it be possible for you to believe one thing and act in another way? Well, would it be possible for you to have one set of convictions and be in charge of something so that your work said that this is what you would have to do? And it's an interesting thing. Now, of course, we're not talking about this individual being that person, but it does bring to my mind at least a discussion that we need to have in the Armenian Church because, as I said, we're going to pull this all together with Candlemass. Okay, let me share with you parts of the article. It says, Jesuit College's leader is of a different cloth. David Burcham, president of Loyola Marymount University, isn't a priest. He's not even Catholic. But as the school enters its second century, it's fallen on him, in suit and tie, not cloak and collar, to redefine the meaning of a Jesuit education. David Burcham stood before the altar in Sacred Heart Chapel at Loyola Marymount University. The midday sun beamed through the stained glass windows, and a crucifix loomed over his shoulder as the university president offered a stirring defense of the school's Roman Catholic legacy. The Jesuit mission, he said, with its strong tradition of truth-seeking, is more relevant and important than ever before because our world is in danger of drowning in disinformation. He went on, Jesuit and Marymount traditions of intellectual analysis, moral reflection, and civic action are an antidote to superficiality. We train young people to think deeply about the critical issues as they cultivate wisdom, accountability, and fair-mindedness. Those who came before Burcham had been men of the cloth, Jesuit priests, who would often say Mass from the place where he now stood. But on this day, rather than wear the cloak and the collar of his predecessors, Burcham stood before the packed chapel in a suit and tie. He's not a priest. He's not even a Catholic. Yet it has fallen on him to redefine the meaning of a Jesuit education as the university enters its second century. Burcham, 60, may be the only Protestant in charge at one of the nation's 28 Jesuit colleges and universities. But he's certainly not alone as the first layman or non-clergy. Since Georgetown University, arguably the most prestigious Jesuit school, named a layman as president in 2001, a number of schools have followed suit. Now, the article continues and it goes on to, you know, some of the difficulties that the leadership has had in defining presidents for the university. It goes on to talk about Catholic schools in general, the Jesuit universities in particular, and so on. Now, what I'm challenging you to think about is, here's an interesting situation. You've got a Jesuit university. You've got Catholic education being now defined by a non-Catholic. Interesting, huh? Okay, do you see where I bring in the parallels right here? Okay, how important is it in our church? We have some interesting situations many times that I've talked about, I've shared with you, in Armenian church environments, where you've got people who are very nice people, perhaps ethically, morally, on a scale, you could put them up on the top of the scale from what we see, but when it comes to faith, they are not members of the faith. In other words, you told them that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and they might nod at you, and deep down they will tell you that, you know, that's nice that you want to believe that, but don't convince me about things like that. In fact, I have been in parishes where, this is hard to believe, you've got people who are parish council members, in other words, charged with the running the administration of the church, that flat out will tell you they don't even believe in God. Yeah. I mean, you know, luckily they're not too many, but I've seen this firsthand. I've seen this. And, you know, you need to be able to be nice about it, but forceful at the same time. Forceful in the sense that a person like that doesn't belong in the administration of a church. And so it's very interesting right now when, and arguably you could read from what I read, and we will definitely put the entire article on our show notes today, so, and I invite you to read it. Arguably, what he's talking about is not about theology. He's talking about justice, about social justice, about the elements of truth. But it does come down to a non-Catholic defining Catholic education. Now, I know, you read through it and you see that, you know, elements of what we're talking about are about things that are important no matter what your faith is, about truth, about seeking justice, about social change. And definitely, I mean, there is a case to be made about that, that here is somebody who is talking about the goodness that is coming. But it's basically, do the ends justify the means? Okay, so we have these goals that the Catholic Church is after. We have these goals that Christianity tries to expand. So does it matter how do you get there? Does it matter how you get there? And it's an interesting dialogue that we need to have, because I'm sure you've all heard of that expression, the cafeteria Catholic. You know, the one who decides, and this is something that they've discussed in the Catholic Church. Is it okay to pick and choose what you want? Much like a cafeteria where you have three different types of salads, you pick one salad, then there is the main course, you pick one of those main courses, then you pick one dessert, you put it together, and that's your meal. Can you do that with your faith? And this expression, cafeteria Catholic, has come about in the Catholic Church. Like, is it okay? Because you have your pronouncements against birth control, for instance, by the Pope, and the Catholic Church does not accept all that. And most people cannot adhere to that, okay? So you say, okay, well, it's okay. I will pick and choose. The pronouncements on birth control don't matter to me. I'm going to do what I want. But there are pronouncements about social justice which talk to me. I will follow that. And there are expressions out there that make sense to me and other expressions that don't. But still, I consider myself Catholic. And this discussion has been going around here in the United States, I would say, for the last 60 years, since President John Kennedy, the first Roman Catholic president of the United States, came to be elected. I mean, I remember, I was a little kid back then, but I remember the discussion that was taking place. Like, can we elect a Roman Catholic to the presidency? Because after all, wouldn't he have to adhere to the edicts and the decisions that came out of Rome or came out of the Vatican? And at what point do you compromise? At what point do you say, this is what I believe and these issues are irrefutable, these issues are not? So is it fair to say that somebody can maybe, for instance, say, take the issue of Jesus being the Son of God and say, well, I can't accept that totally. But I do like what he says. So I want to consider myself a Christian. Can somebody come over there and say that the virgin birth is not important? I kind of doubt that it even took place. But I think that Jesus is everything that he says he is. How do you put all that together? Which parts do you take? Which parts do you leave behind? Again, I'm not picking on this person. That I think this article opens up that dialogue for us, okay? It's not about this person. This person probably, they're talking about issues of justice, which I know the Jesuits, the Marymount tradition, it's all in there about intellectual analysis, moral reflection, civic action. These are things they talk about, and I've been actually deep down, those of you who have known me and have been following the Next Step know that deep down there is such an intense respect for the Jesuits and for the work that they do that I'm not trying to cut that down. What I'm trying to say is, at what point do we put our feelings, our convictions to the test? So that when you say, I believe in something, it means something, right? I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you? I believe that he was born of virgin birth. What does that mean to you? I believe that I'm going to heaven. What does that mean to you? Now, let's push it a little bit further. What does it mean in our daily life? I mean, I'm so critical about these people who come and talk to you about going to heaven and hell and stuff like that. I mean, think about that for a moment. What's the big deal about that? Oh, it has a lot of big deal for you and me, right? On a personal level, but what is it to anybody else? What am I going to do with the knowledge if I'm going to heaven and you're not? What am I supposed to, like, celebrate? Hey, look at me. I'm in heaven and you're not. What am I supposed to do with that knowledge? Am I supposed to convince you to change your path? And how am I so sure about my path? Now, this being said, let's talk about what we're trying to do over here in terms of Armadoxy. Trying to make the faith relevant for today. Well, you've got situations right now in all big communities that are life-changing, that are life-shattering, that are destroying families. In particular, I'll tell you about one situation. It's called domestic violence. You know it. I know it. I'm talking about Armenian community, but you know within every community, there are issues of domestic violence that never go reported because of the shame, because of the difficulties in physically getting out there and talking about it. These are real challenges to communities. I know firsthand. I'll tell you about it. I know people who cannot report it because they are so scared of what will happen to them physically, not only in reporting it, but in the losses that they will suffer. What will happen? Because all of a sudden, this terrible act becomes a case for the law, and basically, who has the right lawyer? Where is justice being served? Let's go beyond now, okay? We're going to be talking about life-changing, life-shattering activities that take place, such as domestic violence. How about the financial situations that we're in? Is it fair? Let's talk about fairness, okay? Is it fair that I sit in a church and pray with somebody next to me who basically is not only has the means to take care of himself and his family, but basically can take care of many, many families while I am struggling with my means? Is it fair that I am unable to feed my children while I see over there there's somebody who is having a party and dumping out in the dumpster there is more food than I will ever have in the next month or in the next 2 months? And these are real situations that are happening all around us. You don't believe it? I mean, I don't want to keep picking on Glendale, but we have a tradition over here in Glendale, and it's a sickening tradition where they have wedding feasts. And it's basically one trying to outdo the other one. And the sickening part about it is you go to these feasts and there is so much food that is put on tables that is later just basically thrown into the trash. This food is being created with the sole purpose of being thrown away. Now, this is something I see But let me not just pick on this. You go into the trash bins at any one of the major fast food outlets, and you find tons of food that are being thrown away. And yet you see pictures and you know of people that are suffering from hunger. How do you make that connection? Where does practicality meet the theoretical? Where do you put this all together? And this is a basic question that I have, that I keep pounding on. Where is the relevancy of our church? It comes about when we can make this connection. When we can make this connection and say, yes, this church is real because it is taking care of these needs. And it comes down to this. It comes down to believing in what you're preaching. It comes down to believing in what you are teaching. This is so important. Now, again, I'm not going to pick on what's going on over there in the Catholic Church. I think that they have found a fine medium, but I'm talking about what the reality is in our faith today. To be able to believe, if you believe, now this is it, if you believe that the church is the body of Jesus Christ, what must that church do? It must act the mission of Jesus Christ. So if you see a family that is struggling through domestic violence, what would Jesus do? Would he walk past them? Would he open his arms? Would he shelter the person who is being abused? Would he feed the children who are going hungry? Would he take care of these people? Would he find them, empower them, so that they can move on beyond their situation, so that they could maximize their potential as human beings, living in harmony with others? Would he heal the pain? Is that something that Jesus Christ would do? I personally believe he would. So that is my belief. That is a belief that has been passed down to me through the apostolic church, that has been passed down to me through my faith. And I know people will say, oh, I believe in Jesus Christ. I don't believe in the church. I don't believe in religion. There was a few weeks ago, there was somebody who had like, I believe it was like 6 million, 7 million hits on YouTube. And I had not only my friends, I had friend priests that were passing around this video. I like Jesus, but I don't like religion. Hey, folks, have you ever thought about where you've gotten Jesus from? Jesus has arrived 2,000 years later because of the church, because of religion, because the church said that we need to put it together. We need a Bible. We need to write this. We need to document it. And so all these images that you have, and not to talk about what Hollywood has done for us too, but most of these images that you have are coming to you courtesy of the church. You can't talk about Jesus without talking about religion. Now, what he stands for, what he teaches, is something that you are sifting through. You're looking at, and you're picking and choosing the parts that make sense to you. We all do this. We are in a cafeteria. We are living in a pluralistic world. Not everything is the same. It's not homogenous. We're getting bits and pieces from here and there. And so when we look at Armadoxy, we're going back to the roots. We're in this process together. We're looking at the material and saying, what existed beyond this? What was there 2,000 years ago? What was there 3 billion years ago? How about 13 billion years ago when it all came to be? Okay, what is the essence of all reality, if not love? And can we latch on to that love and then make it practical in our lives? So that when somebody is hurting of domestic violence, we truly become the Church of Jesus Christ. Not expecting Christ to come out of the clouds and say, hey, here I am, I've come to save the day. But instead, you becoming a member of that church, which opens up your coat, which opens up your house, your shelter to these people in need. When you see people suffering from hunger, Not to expect that God is going to send manna and bread, and because you've read it in some kind of a fairy tale, that it all of a sudden it starts raining loaves of bread. But instead you say, hey, I have a head. I have some money. I am able to put together these processes, and I am able to reach out and feed those people. How am I going to be an agent of Christ? That comes from a real belief. A belief that what you're teaching, what you're talking about is real. And that reality is that the church is the body of Jesus Christ. And as the body of Jesus Christ, we are the hands, we are the feet, and Jesus Christ, this is going to bother people, can do nothing without us. The love that he has, the passion that he has, that he shares with us, comes to being because our hands, our feet, do the walking, do the touching, do the reaching out, do the hugging, and take care of those in need. And conversely, that body is useless, is helpless, if it is not connected to the head, Jesus Christ. As the head of that body, he gives the direction, he gives the inspiration, he gives the love, basically the heart. Not confined within the body, but the heart that we always talk about. The heart that is at the center of the soul and the spirit. Talking to us, reaching to us, and making us whole. The Christian church is the body of Christ. You believe that, then you need to act on what it means to be the body. Okay, I did promise that we're going to bring this all together. I've given you some ground dogs. I've given you some instruction on what the church is. Let's put it all together. First, a small little announcement from Susie.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. We are now in the fourth year of broadcasting and pleased that this voice of Armadoxy is being heard by a worldwide audience. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Address your comments 24/7 to our email address, feedback@epostle.net, or via our website at epostle.net. During these past 4 years, we have consistently produced The Next Step as a gift to our listeners. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that nice reminder. And I want to just tell you that, you know, I hope you use a lot of the stuff that's available on our website. Go and check out epostle.net. You'll find all kinds of material over there. And it has really been created with you in mind. It's there to be shared. God gave this to us freely, and freely we want to share it with people. We are encouraged by your donations, by your participation. You don't know how much your emails go in just really giving us the courage that we need, sometimes the motivation, sometimes the strength to really pursue this line. It is in many ways an uphill struggle, but we are encouraged by your prayers, by your thoughtfulness. One of the big ways that you can support us is just talking about it. Let people know that Epostle is there. Get to our website, click on the buttons that say you like it, share it on Facebook, share it with your friends. I'm very encouraged lately. You know, the Western Diocese has picked up our In Step with Christ broadcast and made it part of their Sunday school programming, so that they're sharing it with Sunday school kids. And the other day I was at an event and we had a young lady who came up to me and she said, you know, I watch you every week. You're on the In Step with Christ. And she said, I just love it because I go in front, when I teach Sunday school, I basically listen to your message over there and then produce it for my kids, give it to my kids. And that's what it's all about. It's about sharing. This is nothing novel. This is something that Jesus Christ has given us. And unfortunately, we've kept it under wraps for so many different reasons that we now have arrived. I remember a few years ago, this was in the year 2005, and I had the privilege, the honor, really, of addressing a gathering that was taking place at the University of Southern California, and the Catholicos of all Armenians was in attendance. And one of the statements that I made, he came up afterwards and he said, never thought about it. And it gave me the encouragement to really start developing it. But that statement was that, you know, we talk about our Armenian church being this church of two millennium. For 2,000 years, we're an apostolic church. We talk about 1700th anniversary of Christianity when St. Gregory the Illuminator established the church in Armenia and in 301. Well, in reality, as much as we want to go back, our Armenian church is a church of 90 years. That's it. It has a history of basically 90 years because the Turks, what they did in the genocide is basically annihilate the Armenian church. They killed off the clergy. They killed off the churches, the communities, but they couldn't kill the spirit. You see, that's the part the Turks couldn't deal with. That spirit is what lived on. And that spirit has brought us to where we are today. And so, yeah, we can talk about a 2,000-year-old tradition, and we're going back to the time of beginning of time, but in reality, the structure that we have, the Armenian church, is a 90-year-old church. It is from the ruins of genocide that people got together, put the faith together, that they planted the seeds of hope, of faith, and love, and bloomed out the Armenian church, which we have today. So many times it's easy to be critical of the Armenian church. It's another thing to do something about it. That's what Epostle is all about. It's not just to say, hey, the Armenian church has faults. Everybody has faults. Every institution has faults. What we're doing at Epostle is saying, here's a way of making that church, making that faith relevant. And that's where we come to right now. Because I promised you, we're going to bring it all together, making that church relevant with a new program that we have right now. Okay, February 14th, Valentine's Day, and also Gyarant Araç. It is the Groundhog's Day of the Armenian people. That's right. It is 40 days after Armenian Christmas, January 6th. Add 40 to it, you've got February 14th. And on that day, we're going to be commemorating, remembering how Jesus was presented to the altar, the dedication, and we're talking about purification. Here in Glendale, on February 13th, the night before, we're going to be organizing a walk. And I'm inviting anybody who's in proximity to participate. Those of you who are outside of the area, I'm going to invite you to make similar opportunities available within your communities or to grab on to us. Get in touch with us via the net and walk with us virtually. We're going to be walking on that evening through Glendale. It's about a 5.5 mile, that's 8.8 kilometers we're going to be walking from Glendale to the town of Burbank, where the diocesan headquarters is, the St. Leon Cathedral. And we're going to be walking in an effort to make awareness for the family, for the sanctity of the family, for us to focus in on a terrible tragedy called domestic violence. And in so doing, here is our hope that we will be able to make it an opportunity for people to come forward and say, yes, we need to address this issue. Yes, this issue is happening. I shared with you a couple years ago when we wanted, this has been one of my pet projects, is to be able to come up and build a shelter for women to go out and have some sanctity, have some sanctuary from their difficulties, to find themselves, to become empowered, to be able to take control of their lives. And one of the, I've shared with you in the past, I've even gone out to the state of Arizona, Nevada. In fact, I've done a broadcast from one of those places because I feel it's so important that we have a sanctuary. And I shared with you some of the frustrations that we've had in building these programs, one of which was that we went to an Armenian official. You could check back in the archives. Yes, I talked about this. We went to an Armenian official from the Republic of Armenia, and he basically said that this is a non-issue. It is not a priority for us to be talking about domestic violence. This was in September 2010. I remember the following day waking up to the tragic news of Zarwi Petrosyan that was smeared across all of the internet about this young girl, this young mother, this young wife, who had been beaten to death by her husband and her mother-in-law. This was in Armenia. And I remembered in my head just recounting the words of this public official who said, it is not a priority. You know what? People always look for statistics. They look for how many cases of domestic violence do you have? Want me to tell you something? If there's one, it's too many. If it's one, it's too many. And this is where we need to start addressing, talking about, and I need your help. I need your help with prayer. I need your help to get involved in this. Because here's the connection to all of this, okay? On that day when we talk about purity, about sanctity, on that day when we talk about dedicating the family, we also talk about making the church real. If you believe that the church is real, where do you think that Jesus Christ would be? Up in a monastery someplace? Where do you think Jesus Christ would be when a child is screaming out because the dad is beating out at his wife? Where do you think Jesus Christ would be? Sitting in a monastery, smoking some incense and praying? Looking up at the pictures of the Virgin Mary? Or do you think that Jesus Christ would be there to offer sanctuary? Do you think Jesus Christ would be there to open his arms and hug? Do you think Jesus Christ would be there to offer that person an opportunity to fulfill her life? I came to give life and give it abundantly. It's time that we take the church seriously. It's time that we put aside all of this nonsense that we have built, that churches are sustained by bingo parties, by chicken dinners, by all of this stuff, the trappings that we have, and start believing that the church is really the body of Jesus Christ. And as such, it does the work of Jesus Christ. And as such, it reaches out. So on this day that we're going to be having the Arantaraj, presentation of our Lord, we're going to use it as an opportunity to present families. We're going to be going to St. Leon Cathedral in prayer, in solidarity. We're going to ask the bishop to bless the families. We're going to be talking about this. Afterwards, there's going to be a traditional bonfire, but that bonfire is going to have a meaning because we're going to look at it as a means of sanctifying, a means of purifying, of sterilizing, of taking off the evil and making it new, making it shiny, making it pure. That's where the church should be. That's what Armodoxy is all about. That's what this ministry has been all about. That's what we're all about. You talk about apostles, you talk about in his shoes. It's walking in the shoes of others, feeling the pain of others. What we say in Armenian, Tsavadanim, let me take your pain. That's where it's all at. And while we appreciate all of the wonderful things that religion does for us and all the good feelings that it has, that it gives us, if it doesn't have a practical application, it's basically, well, like what Jesus says, it looks beautiful on the outside, but rotted on the inside. That's not my faith, and I know it's not yours. I'm going to invite you to get involved in this. We have links on our website on In Issues talking about it. We're on Facebook. We're talking about it. There is an event. If you are in the Southern California area, you want to get involved, if you want to take a trip out, it's a two-hour walk. We're going to be starting Pacific time, 4 o'clock. We're going to be tweeting about it. We'll be on Facebook so you can follow virtually. You can get involved with us all kinds of ways. But I want you to keep that day open. February 13th, it is the night before the Arantaraj, the night before Candlemas, the night before the Armenian Groundhog Day, okay? That's how simple it is. If you want to call January 6th Armenian Christmas, we can call this Armenian Groundhog Day. Bottom line is, we're going to be making some noise for families. We're going to be making some noise for sanctity. We're going to be making some noise for truth and love. We are at the end of today's show. We've come a long way. Before we end, I want to make one more thank you to a wonderful person, wonderful individual who has gotten us to this point. He's been with us for 4 years. That is Ken. He has been our engineer, and we wish him well as he leaves the Southern California area and continues up in Canada. Ken, we'll be looking forward to hearing some good news from you, and please do share all that's happening with us, and we promise that we will be sharing it with our listeners over here on The Next Step. Thank you, and God bless. For all the wonderful people who put this together, I want to just invite you to get involved throughout the week at epostle.net. Listen to our podcasts, to our video broadcasts. Compass with Linda Zadoyan comes out on Tuesdays. Of course, we've got The Next Step, and we've got Questions in Faith, and now The Key publication to find out what's going on at the St. Peter Youth Ministry Center. So for all the wonderful people who put all this together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, and waiting for Ani to come back next week, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us next week as we take The Next Step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with The Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, The Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. Thank you.